Hello, and welcome to the So What podcast, in which political economic analyst JP Lantman discusses the issues uppermost in the minds of South Africans. You can find a written version of this content on JP's website, jplantman.co.za. I am Ruda Lantman, and I am your host. Hello, and as always, a very warm welcome to our So What podcast. This one is dated the 19th of November 2025, and the title, NHI, Where Are We Now? Well, after the Department of Health's presentation to Parliament 3 weeks ago and the medium-term budget statement, NHI is back on the front pages. Where do we start?
Yes, indeed, it is back on the front pages. You're quite right. Look, the first point to make about South Africa's health system is that it has to change. Why must it change? Because affluent people or wealthier people can belong to medical aids, but the cost of private health care has been escalating way above the rate of inflation. So they're subject to price pressures which are quite real. Poorer people, on the other hand, uses the state health system, state hospitals, and we know the state of affairs there. Long queues, waiting times, supplies not being available, that sort of story. So something has to change in our health system. I think we can take that as a point of departure.
But this is not new. Have there been attempts to change it over
yes.
the years?
Oh, absolutely. You're quite right. The first attempt to change started in 1994 at the dawn of democracy, when the first change that was made was free health care for mothers and children under the age of six, as well as a big emphasis on primary health care. Since 1994, government has also embarked on a huge clinic building program precisely to support and expand primary health care. In 1995, there was an NHI inquiry, and it proposed a universal basic primary health care package provided for in the public sector, but with the retention of individual choice in the private sector, for private sector medical aids. So it was the beginning of a process of expanding healthcare. In 1999, the Medical Schemes Act was changed as a result of this inquiry, and a couple of important things were introduced: community rating, open enrollment, and prescribed minimum benefits that all medical aides had to adhere to. So that was quite a step forward. In 2002, we got the Taylor Committee, and it proposed a four-phase process to achieve universal healthcare based, and this is very important, based on multiple funds and a public sector contributory environment. So the idea of having a monopoly fund or just one fund was never on the table. However, this approach of having incremental changes and working with multiple funds in the private sector, retaining choice and supplement that with services in the public sector, that came to an abrupt halt in 2007 at the conference of the ANC in Polokwane. That was the conference, you will recall, where Jacob Zuma was elected president. And there the ANC took the decision that they want to go for a single state-funded national health insurance scheme and minimize or limit the role that private medical schemes will play. So the 2007 Polokwane decision was quite an interruption or a deviation from the approach up till that time.
Well, it sounds as if it was an interruption of a process that had actually been moving towards improvements.
Yes, absolutely. No question about that. There were steady but certain improvements that were being made. The law was changed. Medical aides had to change their benefits and their behavior. And yes, things were moving in an incremental way towards better healthcare for everybody.
Why is the idea of the NHI, this single fund for everybody, why is it so attractive to its supporters?
I think two reasons. The one is there's the idea that there's a lot of money out there that you can mobilize and put into the fund, and then you can give everybody the same health care. We will come to that. That's the one idea. And linked to that, I think the second reason is simply the idea of equality, the idea that everybody should have the same health care. Some people shouldn't have better or worse health care than others. I think those are the two ideas that drove the NHI decision.
Has anyone put some numbers on the table? What will it cost?
No, not at all. But before we get there, can I just make this one point? We have actually covered it, and that is that the whole point of NHI, the way it is being marketed and sold politically to the nation, is that everybody will get the same care. It will, the NHI fund, a state-run NHI monopoly fund, will open the door to the same care for everybody. And both the Deputy Minister of Health as well as the Minister of Health and officials have been very clear about that. That's the vision. Now, that brings us then to your very important question. Is it affordable? Can it be paid for? And that's where it becomes very, very interesting. If you look at the numbers, South Africa at the moment has got 9 million people who are beneficiaries of various medical aids. But the country has got 64 million citizens. So if you now take all the private healthcare money plus all the public healthcare money, which the state spends, and you put it together in one fund, and you say this fund must now look after the treatment of 64 million people, what will then have to happen is that the current level of medical aid covered by medical aids, the current level of service, would have to fall by about two-thirds or 66%. In fact,
so members of medical aids could only get about a third of what they get at the moment.
Yes, that's what it will be. In fact, Adrian Gore from Discovery has calculated that decline in the service level at about 70%. So yes, it's a big drop in the service level. So one of two things must happen. Either you must raise taxes considerably to pay for 100% for everybody, or everybody will have to fall down to a much lower level of service. That's the stark choice that we are faced with. And that's what the numbers tell us. Now, the figures that I've just been quoting is sort of easy numbers to calculate. Much more scientific research was done by Genesis Analytics, and they were commissioned by the Health Funders Association to look into the cost of NHI. And what they have found is that NHI will cost almost R1 trillion a year, 940 billion rand. And here is the really relevant number. That is 400 billion rand more than South Africa's combined public and private healthcare expenditure of about 530 million. So that's what we spend currently, 530, you've got to go to 940. It's a huge, huge increase. And it would imply in their calculations, it would imply that personal income tax will have to go on average from just over 20% to about 47.5%. So it's a massive tax increase. There's no question about that. And what is quite interesting, Ruda, since the Act was signed last year, just before the elections, what has happened is that a very wide coalition of groups have come out against NHI on the basis that it is not fiscally or money-wise feasible. It cannot be done. And I'll quote you some names. There's the Progressive Health Forum, and the word progressive is important. There is the Universal Healthcare Association. There is the Health Funders Association. You've got business group. You've got professional bodies. And it looks as if there are even groups in ANC which are opposed to introducing NHI. In fact, Aslam Dasu, who's convener of the Progressive Health Forum, said it best. He said the NHI is fiscally unimplementable. There is no feasible scenario in which a single tax-financed fund can provide all the cover for the entire population. So the numbers are quite unforgiving. Either you drop service levels or you increase taxes substantially, and it's quite clear that more and more people in society who are attracted to the idea of NHI are less attracted when they start looking at the numbers and what it will mean.
Have alternatives been developed? Are there alternatives on the table?
Yes, there are. And it's quite interesting if you go back, while the health department, after the 2007 decision at Polokwane, were quite single-minded in pursuing NHI, a couple of things happened. The first one is that in 2014, the Competition Commission launched an investigation into the private healthcare market. They published their report 5 years later in 2019, and it was a very substantial and deep analysis of how private healthcare in South Africa operates. And they came out with a number of recommendations, basically to promote competition and in that way drive down the cost of private healthcare. And now Business for South Africa has calculated, based on these recommendations by the Competition Commission, that private healthcare costs can save as much as 20%, can come down by as much as 20% if one implements the recommendations of the Competition Commission. But they have not been accepted by the Department of Health.
Sorry, but the implication is that it could then be cheaper,
yes,
to be a member of a medical aid, so more people could become members.
Absolutely.
That if it was cheaper.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And of course, the more people join medical aid, at the moment about 14% of South Africans belong to medical aid. If you can push that number to, say, 20 or 25, you take pressure off the state system. That's the other side of it. Now, that was not the only alternative that developed. In 2017, former President Halima Motlanthe led the high-level panel review on South African legislation, and his panel recommended a free-tier model, which must combine private sector medical schemes, government employee medical schemes, and the NHI scheme for people who are not employed. So again, the idea of a hybrid system. In 2024, after the Healthcare Act, NHI Act, was signed into law by the President, the Universal Healthcare Access Coalition was formed. They came together, a variety of people from the industry, and they developed an alternative system as well. And what they are suggesting is mandatory medical scheme membership for high-income individuals, so you've got to belong to a medical aid, accompanied by mechanisms to pool risk between schemes and converting the current tax benefits, which medical aid members enjoy, into an income-related contribution subsidy and a new public scheme to compete with the private schemes. So again, a hybrid model, public plus private, with subsidies where necessary and regulation. To strengthen the public sector, the Healthcare Coalition also proposed that the governance model at hospitals must change. Hospitals must be run by independent hospital boards.
After Tembisa,
and I think after Tembisa, yeah. It's a no-brainer. It's really a no-brainer. They also had the rather prescient recommendation in their proposals, or not a recommendation, but a proposal, that the South African government must start negotiating with the governments of neighboring states for those states to pay for health care of those citizens at South African hospitals and clinics. And given the problems that we have around that, protests and so on, as I say, that was quite prescient.
Earlier this year, there was yet another alternative put forward.
Absolutely. The Health Funders Association put forward a set of proposals. They call it NHI Plus. And what is this NHI Plus? It basically says that NHI and medical schemes must all cover a common benefit package delivered by the public and private providers, so same treatment or similar treatment, and all taxpayers will contribute to the NHI fund, in other words, a kind of a broad tax, either directly or via mandatory contributions to medical schemes. So you can either pay the NHI fund or you can pay your medical aid, one of the two, but you must belong somewhere, which, of course, is the same as the Universal Health Care Coalition. Now, like the Healthcare Coalition's proposals, there will be a risk equalization between funds, and redistributive arrangements will see medical aid subsidizing the NHI fund for the common benefit package. So, it's different proposals, it's different ideas, but they all have useful elements one can work with. They're all hybrids, and nowhere is there a suggestion that there must only be one state monopoly fund. Nobody is doing that. Which is the key difference between the NHI fund and what we have currently and what is proposed.
What is the situation internationally? Britain has famously the NHS, for example.
Yes, and that NHS has been around for almost 80 years in
the
UK.
Since 1943?
Something like that. And yet 12%, 10 to 12% of the British population use private medical health care. So even
and
in
and the system allows that.
The system allows that. The most famous one for South Africa would come from Thailand, where there is the so-called 30 baht scheme. Baht is their currency, and you pay 30 baht when you go into a clinic or hospital, and that's all you pay, nothing more. But even there are free schemes, and the 30 baht scheme is only one of three schemes, and these free schemes compete in terms of efficiency and also delivering services to different sections of the population. So nowhere else is there this idea of a universal monopoly fund,
which is run by exclusion of everything else.
Absolutely. And this is work which was done by Anna Donaldson and Tamar Khan in their very, very good report, which we rely on a lot here in this note. Throughout the developed world and developing world, what you find are hybrid schemes, not just a monopoly fund. And I think that's an important point.
Do you think the private sector needs regulation?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Remember, that was recommended by the Health Market Inquiry, by the Competition Commission, back in 2019 already. That's 6 years ago. And if you look at the price rises that we see in private medical care, which really is becoming more and more onerous for private medical members and patients, yes, we do need a form of regulation. Again, that is not a unique thing. It is fairly standard worldwide.
As you said earlier, there seems to be a faction in the ANC, in the health department, which is really ideologically wedded to this single fund monopoly.
Yes.
Might there be some shifts which might change that?
Yes, that's a very interesting point, and let's look at that. What is it then that must shift? What has to shift is the idea. You can have NHI. I mean, all these proposals contain an NHI form. What must shift is what is in the Act, the Section 33 of the NHI Act, which establishes a government monopoly. That's the key point. If you take that out, Section 33, then...
It says that medical schemes may not provide the benefits which are covered by the NHI.
Correct. Absolutely correct. So can Section 33 be changed? Well, let's look at the different forces that are at work. The first force at work is lawfare or court cases. There are currently 8 cases in the high courts against the NHI Act. Now, we cannot go through all the arguments of all 8 cases, but I think it's fairly certain to say that at least some of the cases in some of the aspects which they challenge will be successful. There's a 9th court case, which is not against the NHI Act, it's against the National Health Act, which is different, and it challenged the notion that doctors can be prescribed where they can work. This was declared unconstitutional by the High Court. Sections 36 to 40 of that Act. It was appealed by the Health Department, and it served before there was a hearing in September before the Constitutional Court, and we're waiting for the outcome of that judgment. But that's the National Health Act. The NHI Act, as I say, being challenged by 8 court cases, there will probably be some adverse findings, and then you will have to do a redesign. There are people who are suggesting that it's a deliberate political strategy to let the court cases run, let them rule against the parts or totality of the Act, of the NHI Act, and then you're forced to redesign. There are people saying that's a strategy. But lawfare is certainly one force.
And what is happening politically?
Politically is very interesting. In January, the DA launched a complaint at the... clearinghouse, which deals with disputes between coalition partners, members of the government of national unity partners. And that was resolved, according to the Minister for Planning, in an interview that she gave to News 24 in January. That was resolved with the ANC agreeing to take Section 33 of the Act out. However, the Health
Minister... January 2025,
so the beginning of this year. The Health Minister, Minister Motsoaledi, reacted very vociferously and said, no, that will never happen. But nevertheless, there was an agreement. I have made inquiries whether the agreement was reached, and there is confirmation that it was reached. But since then, everything went quiet. And I think that gives credence to the view that political leaders are waiting for the courts to pronounce. And then you can start a political process of redoing the act.
They're not putting their political capital on the table.
Not yet.
Before it's necessary.
Before it's necessary. So that may or may not be the case. That was in January. In February, there were press reports that factions in the ANC have put forward suggestions on on health, on the NHI Act, which provided for the NHI fund, as the Act does, but also for private medical aids to keep on functioning and servicing people. So it's a kind of, again, the idea of a hybrid system. Now, that proposal, those proposals would take care of the Section 33 monopoly issue. But again, it went quiet. The minister was not happy with the reports, and he said, no, it won't happen. Everything went quiet. So there's something brewing in the political sphere, and we will see what comes out.
And the minister is obviously not the only voice in this whole bigger debate.
I think that's an extremely important point you're making. In fact, I think the more important voice when it comes to NHI is not the Minister of Health. It's the Minister of Finance. For two reasons. Only the Minister of Finance can impose money bills. The Minister of Health can't do it. It's a technical thing, and that's what it is. But secondly, the question is there money? Now, it's very interesting, the medium-term budget statement that we had last week, the Minister was very emphatic that he's not going to take away or abolish the medical aid tax credit which medical aid members enjoy. He called it, quote unquote, an attack on the middle class. Now, those are strong words. Those are strong words. So it tells you where the minister comes from. Now, this is important because abolishing the tax credit and taking that money into the NHI fund is one of the ways in which the health department wanted to finance or wants to finance the NHI fund.
It's one of the pillars of their building.
And if you now take that out, there is even less money available. So the fact that the Minister of Finance has come out so strongly against it, I think is quite a serious indication. If you look at the budget numbers that we got, both in May with the main budget and now last week with the medium-term statement, it's quite clear that there isn't a lot of money for NHI. In fact, there's about just under 10 billion rand allocated in the budget to NHI, and that is for the developing a patient information system, developing a central chronic medicine dispensing and distribution system, and a medicine stock surveillance system. So you're talking about infrastructure. You're talking about technical infrastructure that helps you to spend the money better. That's what the 10 billion is going for. That is not nearly enough. If you think that you spend 530 billion on health in South Africa, 10 billion is really nothing. So I don't think there's going to be money in the next few years for NHI. We can take that as a fairly certain thing. So you've got court cases, you've got politics, you've got the pressure from money. Those three forces may force a change in thinking. But there's a fourth force which I think is also important, and that is the difference between insiders and outsiders.
What do you mean by that? I saw that heading and I wondered.
What it means is that Section 2 of the NHI Act is applicable to all of South Africa, but not to policemen, not to members of the Defence Force, and not to members of the State Security Service. So those three categories of employees, state employees, are excluded from the Act. Now, what it means at the moment is that the roughly 1.2, 1.3 million civil servants all belong either to GEMS. GEMS is the Government Employees Medical Service, a medical scheme, or in the case of higher ranking officials, many belong to Discovery and other funds. They've got more discretion in who they can belong to. Now, if you're going to say to all these people, guys, you must now stop being part of GEMS, you must stop being part of Discovery or whatever other fund you belong to, and you're now going to belong to the NHI. But by the way, this does not apply to soldiers, policemen, and spies. I don't think the public sector unions will take kindly to this. They are, the COSATU public sector unions, COSATU aligned, are very much in support of NHI. I'm not sure they will stay in support if they see this kind of discrimination and, you know, how it can affect them. And they may have to pay more taxes. So this insider-outsider divide could also still play a role. So you've got these four things. You've got lawfare, you've got politics, you've got money, and you've got trade union pressure. And that may result in a change in the NHI approach.
And talking about trade unions, there are new developments on the ground, which also may change things over the next years.
Yes, not a hell of a lot, but there is. For example, in August, NUMSA, which is the most left-wing trade union in South Africa, they are left of Cusader, and they are very much in favor of things like the NHI and so on. They negotiated an agreement in the Motor Industries Bargaining Council. It was the first in that industry for lower paid garage workers to belong to a medical aid fund. Now, you're talking about people who don't earn a lot, people who are, you know, semi-skilled, low-level skills, and they have now been given the benefit of a medical aid with certain benefits. I think we will see more and more of that kind of agreement being made, and that creates a reality on the ground that you cannot ignore. It's another group of people that you will have to say to, sorry, guys, you must now stop belonging to your fund. We're going to transfer the money to NHI.
And the unions are also not going to just wait for NHI to happen. In the presentation to Parliament, the department said 15 years.
Absolutely.
That is a new idea.
It is a new idea. If you look at the timelines in the Act as signed and approved, the timelines are much, much shorter. So there has been what I would call a swerve to realism. In terms of the timelines, it should have kicked in now in the 25-26 financial year. Well, it hasn't kicked in. We know that from the budget. And we know the minister has said he's not going to cancel tax credits. So although it was supposed to be year one, it's not. So there has been a swerve away from the rigid timelines in the Act, and I would say unrealistic timelines, to a much more realistic approach. The thing that we can take from that, Ruda, is that NHI is not going to be a big bang. We're not going to start on the 1st of January of a particular year, and now there's NHI and everything changes. It's not going to be like that. It'll be an incremental process over time, and in the case of the department's schedule, over 15 years. Now, the point is, a lot of water in 15 years is going to flow under the NHI bridge. I mean, for one, in 15 years, you can have enough economic growth to generate the wealth to enable the country to afford better universal health care. That's one. Secondly, over 15 years, you can find many new and other ideas developing, as we have already seen from the alternatives proposed, that can improve the current NHI dispensation, or proposals rather. It is a bit ironic that between 1994 and 2007, we had incremental reforms towards, call it universal health care, that was scuppered by the NHI. Now the NHI itself wants to use the incremental approach over 15 years. There's something like karma in that.
In 15 years, of course, the political landscape may also shift.
I am quite sure it will. I'm quite sure it will, and it'll create a reality that the current NHI planners will have to deal with.
So what? There's a lot of information in this half hour.
Yes, I'm afraid it is longer than usual, and we apologize for that, but it's a complex topic, and it may pay you to actually read the document itself. But back to the old thing of so what? What are the so whats? Well, the first thing, the healthcare in South Africa is unsustainable and it has to change. I think there's nobody serious that really disagrees with that kind of approach. We had huge deregulation in the late 1980s, in the beginning of the 1990s of the medical professions. And it is creating all kinds of results that is not working neither for private patients nor for public patients. The second so what is that the NHI in its current form is fiscally and institutionally unimplementable. And that was Aslam Dasu of the Progressive Health Forum's eloquent summary, and one can't really improve on that. It is not fiscally and administratively or institutionally implementable. Thirdly, from all evidence, and this is really the nub of the story, a hybrid system in which NHI exists alongside private funds is the better route to wider and better healthcare. That idea of not having a monopoly, but having a hybrid and this competition between funds and suppliers is a key issue. Regulation of private sector health sector to curb excessive costs is an essential part of reform. As I've said, Business for South Africa has calculated that if we implement the recommendations of the health market inquiry, it can lower private costs by as much as 20%. So it is something that must be part of a reform program. And I think lastly, both the Department of Health and the other side, the people who say no NHI at all costs, no, nothing, never, I think both of them must climb down a bit and come to the middle and develop, must take a step back and come to the middle and develop a different route to the ultimate aim, which is better healthcare for all.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all the work that went into this, because there is so much information out there, and to get it into a structured form is an achievement.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the So What podcast. If you enjoy this content, please don't forget to leave a review and a rating, and please consider subscribing so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, tell your friends. Remember, you can find a written version of all JP's content at jplandman.co.za.